This is the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. I'm Phil Dave, and coming up on this program. In a special episode, we will be looking into the Board of Deputies' Commission into Racial Inclusivity in the UK's Jewish Community. We have a panel of experts, including people who are at the heart of this very commission, and also those who have contributed. And we are joined in this episode by Chloe Sommer, who is one of the witnesses of said report, Daisy Aboudi, who is Deputy Director of Sephardi Voices UK, Rabbi Joseph Dweck, Senior Rabbi of the S&P Sephardi Community, Sarah Levan, Director of Jewish Life at JCOS, and Stephen Bush, the author of the report and political editor at The New Statesman. Well, welcome to you one and all. Stephen, I think we need to start off first and foremost with you. Just on the off chance that someone is not aware of this report and what's gone into it, would you be so kind as to maybe summarise exactly how this report came about and what has gone into it?
Right. So following the murder of George Floyd, the Board of Deputies, as it often does, made a statement in solidarity, and various members of the community said, well, it's fantastic that we're looking outwards like this, but let's look closer to home. And so they decided to set up the commission and asked me to chair it. We then had a variety of written and oral evidence sessions, and then a huge number of very useful meetings with communal leaders and organizations, so we could talk about things that had come up and were difficult, talk about best practice. And the report is the product of the testimony of our witnesses, the wisdom of our stakeholders, and it's sort of an attempt to bring together over the, embarrassingly, I always get the number of recommendations wrong, which really you'd hope I wouldn't, but across the 114 recommendations, it's an attempt to sort of address the problems in the testimony through sort of spreading best practice throughout our community.
Now, Chloe, as I mentioned, you are one of said witnesses to this. Would you just say from your perspective what it is that you've, well, what you've seen, what you've contributed, and why it was important to you to get your feelings known in this report in order to try and encourage the change that I suppose we all hope it will bring about?
For me, I am based in North London. I'm a mixed race Jew. So my mother is, she'd be seen as a white passing white Ashkenazi Jew. And my father, who's never been in the picture, but that's where my black side comes from. And for me, my mother has been a very big part of the community. She's one of the children's service providers. So we've been very involved within the Jewish community. And unfortunately for me, I was receiving a lot of discrimination, a lot of racism from the community, from, unfortunately, from leaders, et cetera, like rabbinic, et cetera. And I feel that it's really important for all of us to be coming forward to say what has happened to us in the community, such as just terrible racial profiling of security and the assumption that if you're not white passing, you're not born Jewish or you're not Jewish at all. And my Judaism being devalued and just not validated. So that's why I find it really important to come through and say what has happened to me, so that I think the whole community needs to understand that we did not start off as white, as Jews. We come in all different shapes, sizes, colours, etc. And that's why I've had to be using my voice to make sure that we open up this space so that the whole community is welcoming one and all with however we do come.
Now, Rabbi Joseph Dweck, that's actually a really interesting point that Chloe raises there straight off when she says that Judaism is not all about white Ashkenazi, and obviously sort of being in charge of the Sephardi community within this country, you'd, I'm guessing, would be only too aware of that. But yet there is this really strange, almost presumption that when you think of someone who's Jewish, and I think this goes from within the community and outside the community, if I'm honest, when you think of Jewish, you think typically of Ashkenazi Judaism. Why do you think that is? Are we just poorly educated, or where do you think that actually comes from?
I think it's a good question. I think the sheer number, the sheer numbers are play an impact. In most places where you have concentrations of Jewish people, the Ashkenazi constituency is the majority. They're larger in number. And that's part of the beauty of this commission and the report that Stephen led and authored. Because what it's doing is reminding us two in my mind, very important things. First is that the Jewish people are made up of many, as Chloe said, many different people from different ethnicities, different backgrounds. And it's important for us as a people, as we are a minority, as a people, as it is, to be sensitive and aware of the minorities within us. And also to be aware, and I do think that this is perhaps one of the central and most important elements of the Jewish people. We've been around for over 3,000 years, Phil. And that means that in our sojourns on this planet, we've been away from home for 2,000 of them. There's not a country that we have not inhabited, not a language that we have not spoken, not a culture on this earth that we have not incorporated in some way into our national psyche. We are an extremely diverse people. And what this commission and report does is it highlights that reality, and it encourages us and reminds us to pay attention to that and to recognize its value, and not only to recognize its value, but to celebrate it rather than just to accommodate it.
Now, one of those places where typically speaking, a lot of people have, I'm going to say in inverted commas, issues with diversity because they believe it to be the case rather than actually from the inside that being the case. If you look at somewhere like Jewish schools, for example, and Sarah, from your perspective at JCOS, how would you say diversity is mapped out there? Is it a diverse school? Is it primarily white Ashkenazi pupils? How do you define the makeup, if you will, of JCOS?
I think JCOS, you know, if you put me on one leg, I'd say the majority of JCOS students were Ashkenazi. Like Rabbi Dweck says, that reflects the makeup of the community in the UK. But, you know, if you dig a little bit deeper, there's a huge amount of diversity in the school, within families, within people's backgrounds, within the Israeli community who send their children here, with people who come from all kinds of different combinations of backgrounds. So, you know, over the years and over the year groups and throughout the school, I think there is a lot of representation of all kinds of different communities. And certainly within our Jewish education faculty, we've got a vast, you know, a wide representation of different Jewish communities. And we call on that, you know, we like to kind of shout about that as well as examples.
But Daisy, I'm just wondering, sort of based on the work that you do with Sephardi Voices, obviously the idea behind the organization is very much in tune to this, you know, so making sure that the Sephardi is represented in Jewish community life and many other bits and pieces I know that you guys do as well. I'm just wondering whether or not, is this deliberate that Ashkenazi Judaism takes preference? Do you find that to be the case, or do you think it's just a case of re-educating folk to realize the diversity of the community? Because I'll be perfectly honest, for years and years, I had no idea, because I am obviously, just to declare my interest, white Ashkenazi Jew who has been brought up in a white Ashkenazi Jewish household, surrounded by a synagogue community that is, by and large, certainly for the first 20 years, white Ashkenazi Jewish. It doesn't mean that I was deliberately going out my way to exclude anyone or indeed the synagogue. I just didn't know.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. And I think that's actually probably part of the problem. When Sephardi Voices UK was co-founded 10 years ago by Dr. Bea Lefkowitz, who's an oral historian, she found that these stories were just not documented anywhere. And now, 10 years later, we've got them online in the British Library, they're easily accessible. So those kind of excuses that they were nowhere to be found, that maybe were around 10, 15 years ago, don't exist anymore. You can find these stories now, we have them. And these are stories of real people. They're not kind of far away, exotic, oh, let's cook some falafel. These are real people, real refugees. They came to this country now, you know, 50, 60 years ago. This is not recent history anymore. These people are older, and their stories deserve to be told, and they deserve to be part of the British Jewish social history, of British social history. And that all comes down to education, which is obviously a huge recommendation from the report. And I think it's one of the most important things.
You know, I think it's important, you know, this question that you raise, is it simply, you know, a result of educating, you know, the population? And I think that to a great degree that that is true, that, you know, it requires education and requires awareness. But it also, I mean, part of the value of the report is that it is recognizing not just a lack of awareness, it's recognizing behaviors that are currently occurring in the various communities in which, where there are Sephardi Jews, where there are Black Jews, where there are Yemeni Jews, how is it that the general population is responding to them? How is it that they're treating them? How is it that they are incorporating or lack thereof, you know, these individuals in their community? And that's broader than just re-educating or educating. It's calling attention to interaction, to behavior, to sensitivity, to empathy, which I think is extremely important in this report.
Okay, so Stephen, let's look at some of those behaviors. What has the report really made stand out above everything else? You mentioned earlier on about racial profiling. That's come up a couple of times already in this conversation. Is that sort of where the main problem lies, or are there other, quote, main problems? What would you say has been highlighted in terms of behavior specifically within the community that need to, I guess that so many would say would ultimately need to change?
I consciously tried not to approach it from the perspective of what is the main problem. But I think what the stuff around profiling is that, you know, there are many ways. I mean, across the people on this podcast, there are many, many different ways to be Jewish. There are many, many, many ways to think about and experience one's Jewish, but there is not a way to look Jewish. And I think the overarching desire is when people have want to be seen. I don't necessarily mean physically, but they want to, for example, and this I think was one which has really stuck with me. Yeah, at a youth movement, and someone saying, "Okay, it's great. We've had lots of could we have a Sephardi song?" And they said, "Well, no, I want to listen to the songs of my childhood." And so, well, so did this witness want to listen to the songs of their childhood? Yeah, kind of partly because that made me reflect on all of the times that, you know, I'm mixed race, and likely I have African heritage and I have Ashkenazi heritage, and I made me reflect on the times which I've just assumed that is the default story of the whole of our community. And I think, yeah, that the overarching problem in most sort of is, yeah, it's simply a desire to be seen. Yeah, for example, yeah, we know that unfortunately in this country we face a terrorist threat to our way of life, but we all have the same expectation that after we've been through security, right, just as after you've been through security at Ben Gurion, they're immediately trying to sell you stuff and you're sort of welcomed back into the experience of either duty free or the world of airports. But you kind of, you go through the ringer and then you're welcomed. And that act of welcome is an act of being seen. And I think then the overarching issue across all things is people want that feeling that they are seen, represented, listened to, and valued.
I guess the question's got to be, and I don't know how this is answered, by the way, so it's, just forgive me, it's a train of thought, but at what point does fear for security overlap with fear of offending, and what's more important? You know, I'm not suggesting for a second that it isn't hideously offensive to stop someone because they have been potentially and allegedly by a security guard racially profiled. Absolutely not okay. But if someone believes there is a potential threat to security for whatever building that guard happens to be protecting, where are the lines crossed? And, you know, how do we make sure that balance is maintained fairly?
I just feel that it's the difference between where, if there is training that's going on within like the CST, within the security at synagogues and Jewish environments, where it is being seen as the Jews that will be entering this environment will be looking white, and therefore anyone else of colour is a risk. And that is simply not true to actually what the terrorist risk is. Because yes, I know that statistically we can look at what races are going to be more seen as a terrorist threat. But at the end of the day, anyone can be a terrorist, and they do come in all colours. So the issue that I have with it is that when you have me, that I would be coming to my synagogue weekly and I would still be searched when I'm known to the building. But it's the assumption that anyone that will be entering this building who is Jewish will be looking white. And therefore, that's just contributing to the stereotype that all Jews will be white in the UK. And that's what we need to be tackling. It's about making sure that we have the statistic correct to what the security need to be pinpointing as a risk, but not going that the only people in this building will be white, because that is completely not true.
I mean, I should say at this stage, in the absence of someone from the CST, that I know that CST have strenuously denied, and of course CST is the Community Security Trust, strenuously denied that its guards use racial profiling, saying that checks are based purely based on behaviour and absolutely not on colour. So it's important to stress that in the absence of someone from the CST.
Right. Yeah, I think that actually is the really important point to understand. And I'm very clear on this in the report, which is the view of the CST, who are the experts in combating the threat we face, is that racial profiling does not work. They also have a variety of very strongly expressed opinions about the morality of it, but they also fundamentally say it doesn't work. The terrorist threat we face in the United Kingdom at the present time is mostly from two sources: jihadists, who can, you know, can be any colour, and the neo-Nazi far right, who do not traditionally recruit from anything outside quite a limited tranche of the population. But the thing that they very strongly emphasise, and this is clear in their advocacy, it's clear in their hugely useful work, both for our community, but the work I draw on whenever I write about counter-security and police reform, they're hugely important publications and work, is that it doesn't work. And that's why one of the recommendations I have made is specifically to strengthen the role and ability of the CST to act as an ombudsman, as well as because the experiences people have recounted of racial profiling, in one case, what I just think is unquestionably seemed to have been a vendetta by one security, that wasn't keeping anyone safe. And so I think for me, there is no conflict whatsoever, right? Also, not least because security and welcome don't necessarily need to sit with the same hat. I think it's as basic as, after you've gone through security, which is something I always expect to do, because I only ever turn up for, major celebrations and for food. So I expect someone to think I'm a stranger. But at the end, I also expect to be given a fraternal greeting. And I think it's as simple as it's actually about excellence in security, not about going, is there a compromise between excellence in security and racial profiling? And that's the thing the CST have always been very clear on. And really the recommendations on the recommendations on security would not be as strong or I think as valuable if it hadn't been for the wisdom and participation of the CST in the process. So I would just very, very strongly emphasize, I think, then it is not an either or.
Well, thank you. I think that absolutely is an important point to raise, and it certainly does clarify sort of the difference between this, I suppose, either or situation that I think many people would be forgiven for thinking of. But if we shift attention slightly now more towards the education parts of the report, and I know that it has asked for schools to increase focus on colonialism and Black history. Now, we already have in this country Black History Month. It's a major part of the year where a lot of content on the mainstream and also in education focuses attention on Black history. But Sarah, is that suggesting then that Jewish schools somehow don't do this already? Does JCOS ignore the fact that it's Black History Month around the end of the year?
Last summer, actually, after the death of George Floyd, we were approached by a group of students who had a lot of thoughts and feelings about JCOS and how in both within the formal curriculum and in the wider informal curriculum, how all of this was addressed. And so one of the questions was, well, why don't we do more for Black History Month? Actually, as it happens at JCOS, we have always marked Black History Month. We've got a particular member of staff who's always been very, very keen to mark it with assemblies and displays. So we have always marked Black History Month. But this group of students felt that in the curriculum, there was more that could be done. And in the wider informal curriculum, there was more that could be done. I have to say that curriculum-wise, the history department, the English department, the art department, the Jewish studies department, we were all approached by students, and teachers were falling over themselves, really so delighted. First of all, the students were showing an interest in curriculum and what they were being taught, and really happy and ready to review the curriculum and really think about what could we change, what could we add in. So in the Jewish Education Department last Black History Month, we added in a whole unit of learning around the story of the Ethiopian Jewry, which is a fantastic story to tell. And teaching it for the first time in October as a result of the conversations with these students. First of all, I've probably taught, 500 or 600 students, most of whom had never really heard the story of Ethiopian Jews before, who really, you know, it was somewhere on the range of surprise to shock for them that they're, you know, that this community has a story and has an amazing story. And then that led to a whole load of other conversations, which kind of tied into what you were saying, Stephen and Chloe, which is about them saying, oh, Jews come in all different colours, you know, and what does that look like? And that led very nicely this year into our celebration of Sigd, which is something else that we mark in school. And again, having that conversation about what Sigd is and how Sigd in the Ethiopian community has a significance and is part of a calendar which is not in the Ashkenazi calendar, but there's another calendar which has equal value, which has equal importance. So I think that, I don't think, in answer to your question, Phil, I don't think we were in a terrible state before, but I do think that in the last year, I think pressure from students and involvement of students and the response of students to the events of last summer have really led to a time of reflection and a time of improvement and a time of saying, okay, what are we doing well and what can we do better? And I think that's something that, I'm not just speaking for JCOS, I think that's something in education that we are constantly doing.
Now, therein, you've just raised a point there that I believe many, in particular white Ashkenazi Jews, would probably think we're not doing so bad, or we weren't doing so bad before. And this is actually one of the biggest problems, is that I have to be honest and say, I don't know what's expected of me. As a white Ashkenazi Jew, I don't actually know what I'm doing wrong by maybe not acknowledging some other divisions within the community. And I don't actually like the term divisions, to be honest with you. Other members of the community, as far as I'm concerned, if you're a Jew, you're a Jew. It's as simple as. So, but with other members of the community, I don't know how I'm supposed to behave. And I don't realise, I don't consciously do anything wrong, as far as I'm aware.
Can I just clarify, just to be clear, when I say I don't think we were doing badly, I think that, for example, when you teach history and colonial history, what viewpoint and what perspective you teach from makes a huge difference. And I think our history faculty were really rigorous in looking at the curriculum and saying, is this being taught from equal perspectives? Are we giving equal perspectives? Are we telling history from the point of view of colonialism? Or are we telling a fuller story? You know, in the same way, the number of Black writers that are studied in English. So in the secular curriculum, that's where I would say we were doing okay. I think we're doing better now. I think the Jewish curriculum is another conversation. I think it's two separate conversations.
Okay, but then there's one thing that strikes me straight away, and that is that it's a numbers game. I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. When you think of the Jewish community, one of the main reasons possibly why this has been allowed to slip for so long is because, and I don't have the exact figure, so Stephen, if you have any information on this, please feel free to correct me. But in terms of the numbers, I believe it's a fair assessment to say that the majority of the Jewish community in the UK does come from a white Ashkenazi background. Now, that doesn't mean to say, by the way, that anyone else from any other part of the community should not feel included, or education shouldn't be taught based on other members of the community. But I guess it's about where the interest lies. And Daisy, I'm just wondering from your perspective, I don't know about your background, I don't know about your education, I don't know if you went to a Jewish school or not, but would you say that if there has been that overemphasis on Ashkenazi and always going through your mind, well, hang on, I'm Sephardi, what about me? Where does the balance get struck? Because there's an argument to be had, I would have thought, that says, well, hang on a second, Sephardi's not my heritage. But then you'd say, well, hang on, Ashkenazi is not my heritage. Do you see what I mean? Where is that balance?
Yeah, I do. I understand what you're saying, but I think it's, forgive me, slightly lazy to say that just because it's not yours, you don't need to learn about it or know about it.
As I did say, I promise you, it doesn't mean that it shouldn't be.
No, I know. I'm not you personally, just one to say that. But I think I didn't go to a Jewish school. I grew up in South London, so I didn't grow up with a Jewish in the Jewish North London Jewish community. And I've always been interested in history, and I didn't learn about the British Empire in school as part of the curriculum until I got to A level. And then it was one module where we were writing about whether the British Empire was a good thing. And that's just not good enough. Okay, that was a while ago now. I don't know if the curriculum has changed, but I don't think it has. And that's a wider problem for the whole of the country, but it is a problem that we need to kind of address. That's in itself is not good enough. In terms of within Jewish spaces, so I went to a Sephardi synagogue, even though my background is Middle Eastern. When my grandparents came to the UK, that was the closest thing that they could find that was familiar to them, and they joined a Sephardi synagogue, and that's the synagogue I grew up in. But I wasn't really a part of a Jewish community until I went to Jewish youth groups when I was 16. And that was fully Ashkenazi space. The Kat Hamazon was in, you know, Ashkenazi tune. Actually, I didn't even know what the word benching meant until I went there. I had to learn. It was that basic, because that's not something I grew up with, and I wasn't exposed to it because I didn't grow up in a Jewish area. So my Judaism came from being at home. The services, it was a pluralistic Jewish youth movement. So the services were, you know, you could choose to go to an Orthodox service or a progressive service or no service. And none of them kind of fit what I wanted to do, because I couldn't understand any of the prayers in the Orthodox service. I couldn't follow it at all. I wasn't familiar with the progressive service, and I, again, didn't really understand it. And the kind of no service option would generally focus on, you know, cultural stuff, which didn't really appeal, like, talk to me. I couldn't talk about these things because they weren't my point of reference. And that's not a problem to have both, but it would have been nice over the course of, for example, the whole event to have maybe one of the services with an Ashkenazi tune and one with a Sephardi tune. It's not to say that the Ashkenazi culture and history and prayer is any less valuable and that it shouldn't happen. This is an addition, and it should be added. It's not an instead of. I don't think anyone's trying to detract from Ashkenazi Jewish culture or history or food or music or anything. This is something added, and I don't think anyone can lose by knowing more about other cultures and other people. And like Rabbi Dweck said, you know, we're all part of this Jewish community, Jewish family, Jewish people. And so all of us should know about each other.
So the thing I would also add is that the recommendations about education aren't because I think that Jewish schools are particularly bad at this. Indeed, actually, some of these specific recommendations outside of the world of education. So, for example, I recommend, although I suggest it may be more appropriate to teach about SIG during Black History Month rather than on the day itself, because the number of the Ethiopian diaspora resident in the United Kingdom is, you know, is teeny tiny. But the reason why that is in there is because of a piece of testimony from a parent of a child at JCOS who just, yeah, and this person has, no Ethiopian heritage or whatever themselves. They just thought it was really interesting, and they just thought it was a great thing that the school had done. And they said, I think that, you know, they because I was very clear in my mind very early on that I was, of course, going to recommend wide communal observation of the 30th of November. And then looking at various things the State of Israel has done for inspiration, I was kind of on the fence about it until this message from this. So some of the stuff about the history of empire is about best practice that's already happening in schools. But if I had been doing this at a national sales, I would have also said, well, we should teach the empire, partly because, of course, the history of empire is also our history, right? Why did some British Jews' parents or themselves come here in the 1970s? Well, because of the bungling of the retreat from empire, which meant that Middle Eastern Jewish communities, which had been safe to be Jewish for thousands of years, you know, had to flee, in part because of the bungling of British Empire. Actually, Kwasi Kwarteng's Ghosts of Empire captures all of this stuff really well. I'm also just a history nerd, right? History is my first love. But I think that, you know, although I am, you know, I'm proud of my Ashkenazi heritage, and I'm proud of that history of, you know, we came to the United Kingdom because of the Russian Empire. But the global history of empires and their legacy is also the global history of us as a people. And I think it's an also an and rather than a, you know, rather than a kind of, oh, you know. But I mean, of course, yeah, you're exactly right. The vast majority of our community in this country at the present time is Ashkenazi. Large numbers of us who are mixed race, of course, are also Ashkenazi. But for me, it's about both and, but also those recommendations can be found in the Sewell report. They can be found in the McPherson report. That's a pretty universal and, yeah, kind of widely agreed. Yeah, I think, yeah, we have this slightly weird situation. One of my sort of big hobby horses is that almost everyone in the country can name Henry VIII's six wives, but they can't name Benjamin Disraeli, the first ethnic minority prime minister and one of the big architects of the British Empire, which shapes our modern diversity. Yeah, and you know, if I had been writing this report, for the whole of the United Kingdom, I said, look, we should aim for every school child to know why Benjamin Disraeli was such a significant figure. And that's not me saying, well, you know, the white British have to learn our Jewish history. That's all of our history is contained in figures like Benjamin Disraeli. All of our history is contained in the journey that, you know, some British Jews made here from the Middle East as the British Empire, you know, broke up in chaos and disorder.
Rabbi Dweck, at this stage, I just want to pick up on something that Daisy mentioned. I'm only moving on just because I'm very aware of the time, so forgive me. I'm sure there's lots we can say about all of the things we're talking about in this particular program, but I do want to try and shoehorn in a couple more particular points. And one of those points is that the report suggests about the introduction of more tunes and more services and prayers from other parts of the community within Ashkenazi synagogues. Now, I have to say that the synagogue I go to, I think, is already a bit of a champion of this. I'm very aware that we already do have certain prayers and songs that are always very proudly introduced by our rabbis, who are Ashkenazi rabbis, saying, this is actually what it would be like in more Sephardi tradition. We already have that. You know, we are actually quite good on that. That's for Edra and Henan Reform Synagogue. But I am a Reform Jew, and therefore I suspect that's possibly more why. But I'm just wondering, Rabbi Dweck, what happens when it comes to other synagogues that maybe boast a more traditional way of life? How is it possible that we can suddenly encourage other synagogues to become almost a hybrid, as it were, of lots of different culture coming together? Is that even realistic?
Well, I'm not sure that it's that the aim is to create hybrid synagogues across, you know, across the UK or across London and, you know, the Jewish communities. It's more about the empathy and awareness. It's more about recognizing who are the constituents of your congregation, who sits in the pews. Are they all of one color? Are they all homogenous? Who are the people? I mean, I can certainly say, as a Sephardi Jew growing up, I mean, I grew up in Los Angeles and then lived in New York, and I recognize, you know, almost anywhere I go in a Jewish community, there is a serious ignorance of difference, of what makes me different as, for example, a Syrian Jew whose family came from Aleppo and then earlier from Spain. And when I say ignorance, I mean that there is not even an awareness of the questions to ask. There are assumptions. There is a great deal of assumptions as to what is Jewish. And I think that one of the things that I've recognized is that in you know, Ashkenazi normative communities or in Ashkenazi normative, you know, environments, the cultural aspects of Judaism, the ethnic aspects of Judaism, are seen by no real fault of their own. I mean, this is just kind of like how people are raised, but they are seen as the core of Jewish ideas and ideals. And that is really where things need to shift and change. So it's understandable if the majority of a synagogue are white Ashkenazi constituents, then the majority of the prayers and services are going to be in that mode. And I think that, you know, for the most part, other individuals that are members of that congregation will understand that to a degree. But let's say that I am not a white Ashkenazi member and my son or daughter is being bar and bat mitzvahed. Yeah. How is my congregation going to recognize my unique culture, my unique ethnic richness? Those are the sensitivities that are important. Those are the spaces that can be expanded and recognize in order to be able to create a more inclusive environment. So I don't know that it has to be hybrid, but I do think that a great deal of work can be done in order to be able to create greater recognition, greater education, greater inclusivity, and where there is a feeling of belonging. I don't necessarily need to have all of my tunes sung, all of my minhagim, my customs practiced, in order for me to feel that I belong in a group of fellow Jews. But I do need to be seen, and I do need to be known and respected. And those I think are the key elements.
Now, there's some fierce nodding going on here, I have to tell you. I know you can't see this, this is a podcast, but obviously if anyone is listening to it, you won't appreciate that most of the panel all nodding along in agreement with that. Chloe, from your perspective, though, there's something that Rabbi Dweck just said there, which I thought was so poignant. It's you need to be seen by your community. Are you seen by your community?
So for me, within the Jewish community, within the synagogue, I'm someone who I'm not necessarily like extremely religious at the moment. I feel like I might have been drifting away from that. But I feel that from when I was in the community, like I was seen quite different compared to my white Ashkenazi members. So it was quite a challenge to feel that I am equally as represented as they are. But I feel that the more people are educating themselves on all the different types of Jews that are in the community, the diaspora, like, you know, we come in all different shapes, sizes, colors, that I feel that there is starting to become an understanding of everything that we are. And therefore people are like understanding who I am and to respect how, like, yes, you might be white Ashkenazi, embrace that. And also I'm here as mixed race Ashkenazi, embracing that too, as well as all the other different types of Jews. We must all be equally represented. So that's currently how I feel at the moment. I feel like we do have a longer way to go to make sure that everyone is really being equally represented and there is a full inclusivity across the board. And that's probably globally with Jews, not necessarily just within the UK, but it's just about making sure that we are being fully educated on all the history with our diaspora, with the Jewish history as its entirety, not just within one specific sector. Where when I feel that when I was at school, which was, I went to a Jewish school and I left, I don't know, about 5 years ago now. And, you know, it was naturally in this country, like because of the white supremacy that has been going on, you do have white favoring curriculums. And I feel that my school was majority white Ashkenazi and there was a favoritism around teaching white Ashkenazi curriculum and within the Jewish sector. So for me, with education, I know we were speaking about Black History Month, and it's really important that Black history is every single day. I'm not just Black for 1 month. And it's not a thing where we now tick a box because we've now taught the Black history within Black History Month itself, and then we leave it until the month comes again the following year. It's about, you know, as I've said, that there is white favoring curriculum, like within white history, that is university taught all the time. Like that is fully covered. And therefore we need to make sure that, yes, fair enough, like if there are white people who are like, but I want to only learn my history. Of course, there's all different types of history across the board. We need to be teaching history which reflects all the types of people in this world. And I feel that when I was at school, when we were learning about Jewish history, how there was such a focus and sensitivity within the white Ashkenazi Jewish history, and which is so important, we must be learning about that. But then what about all the other types of Jews and their history within our community that needs to be taught and expressed as well? Because how do we expect anyone to know that there are all different types of people in this world if we're only learning about one type of person? And that's what I always encourage, is to make sure that all history should be taught every single day. We should be embracing that and encouraging that for all types of people.
Okay, if I may just sort of just cut in here with one sort of point I want to pick up on very quickly, and then we must sort of move on because we're pretty much out of time. But it fascinating when you use the expression white supremacy, because that to me, as someone who is obviously of white heritage, conjures up this image of, say, individuals who are from more of a Nazi background, an extreme right wing. I am not extreme right wing by any stretch of the imagination. I don't look at it as white supremacy. I just look at it as that my ancestors who came from all over the place, which might I stress as well, also some of my heritage is African. I know I don't look it, but my family do stem from South Africa. Okay, white South African, but even so, the point is that it's still there. It's still very much a part of my history. But I've never felt, and I don't think any of my ancestors have either, that the British population, the British country, has been anything other than just sort of carrying on with life as as they knew it, as it were, and that it was never about sort of not making anyone feel welcome. It was much more about it's just tradition for this country. It's surely it's not white supremacy, is it?
Just to clarify, I wasn't referring to within white Ashkenazi being a thing that white Jews are trying to enforce white supremacy there. I was just referring to generally within the UK.
That's exactly what I mean. Generally within the UK, I'm not sort of overly familiar with that being the case. On the contrary, I'd say this is arguably one of the more tolerant countries.
Well, this is a thing where I think a lot of people, this is where we need to be. I think where like the education can be slipping in some areas, because understandably, environments, I think, across the board, like where they are going to be white favoring. We literally have where you have many of us in the UK, like particularly within the Black community, where we are fighting to make sure that we are not having just white based curriculums. As I was saying, where all schools are fighting for Black history to be taught, as well as all the other types of cultures that need to be taught in our history. Like for me, my history lessons were all just talking about, I don't think the British Empire was necessarily even touched upon that much, but obviously curriculums have been extremely white favoring, and that's why we are here trying to fight to make sure that that needs to be deconstructed. And I feel that white favoring curriculums are in place because there is this icon of white supremacy. How white is the norm? That is what people are getting like a higher position as if you are within obviously a white race. So that's what it's about, is to make sure that we hopefully can be deconstructing that to make sure that there is a shared right of everyone's history being taught.
Just to add to that, to kind of back up what Chloe has said, that there are legacy, like there is a legacy of empire in Britain, and those racist kind of views are still there. I don't think it's okay to just say, oh, we're more tolerant here than other countries and therefore everything's okay, because it's clearly not.
Okay, but I suppose that the point I'm making is that it's come up about how white is, quote, the norm. Well, I don't know what the latest census has drawn up, Stephen, but my understanding is that for a large majority of the country, forgive me for saying it, the white is, quote, the norm. And with that in mind, does that mean that that sort of history being taught and the history of Black heritage being taught across the education system, is that going to be, I suppose the word I'm thinking is feasible, in parts of the country that are, say, not as diverse as, say, here in London or the other main cities? Do you see what I mean? If we're trying to pick apart the education system, whether it be within the Jewish community or the wider country, when a massive chunk of the country can't relate to that?
Well, I'm not trying to pick apart the education system, nor am I trying to make people have an education system that isn't relevant to them. But to go back to my point about Benjamin Disraeli, there is a specific shared historical resonance to Benjamin Disraeli for everyone on this call, because while he was not religiously Jewish, he was ethnically Jewish, he was treated as such, he experienced anti-Semitism, he overcame it to be the first ethnic minority and the first Jewish prime minister of the United Kingdom, and thus far the only ethnic minority to become prime minister of the United Kingdom. But his history isn't important just to us. His history is important because Benjamin Disraeli hugely expanded the number of people in this country who could vote. He hugely expanded the reach of this country's territorial ambitions and empires. He was the one who created the title of Empress of India. And therefore, Benjamin Disraeli is not just, his legacy is not just a story of Jewish success, but it's a story of why, you know, why the largest ethnic minority community in the United Kingdom are people from the Indian subcontinent, because of Benjamin Disraeli, because of the decisions he took. So, and that's also a story of, yeah, not just something, yeah, and that, if, you know, if you're in a school where every single person is white British, well, you know, the reason why, you know, the flavours in the sandwiches you buy, you know, buy in Tesco's or what they are because of Benjamin Disraeli. And that is, I think, very much what, yeah, definitely, and to return to that sort of parent at JCOS, again, this is why I'd like to make it very clear. These recommendations are in large part about best practice that already exists within our community. The thing that they liked about that is the conversations it enabled them to have about, with their child, about the whole of their history and the whole of their history. So yeah, I mean, to go back on and to just vehemently agree with Rabbi Dweck's point, I'm very much not calling on hybrid organizations, but I'd also like to make it very clear that this isn't a situation where, you know, the Reform and the Liberal are doing everything brilliantly and modern Orthodox are doing everything. There's good practice and bad practice everywhere. But I would also just emphasize that when a Reform synagogue includes Sephardi liturgy and history, and so that is not it being a hybrid. There ain't no Reform movement without the Sephardi community in the United Kingdom. There's no history of the Board of Deputies without the Sephardi community founding it in the first place. So that's not about a history that is irrelevant to me because I am Ashkenazi. That is integral to the things I experience and the, you know, the things that were here at the time that my great-great-great-grandparents arrived here are because of that part of our history. So it's not about a history that is... The history of empire is not black history. It's not Asian history. It's not Jewish history. Without the British Empire, you wouldn't have as many Jews in the United Kingdom as we do. We wouldn't have as many black people in the United Kingdom as we do. We wouldn't have as many Asians in the United Kingdom as we do. But it is also the history of each and every one of us. And that is very much what I'm aiming to do in this room, is to tell the story of each and every one of us in its fullest and most accurate sense in a way that is, yeah, relevant and of meaning to everybody.
Well, sadly, we are completely out of time. There is so much more left to be discussed on this. So I would love it if you would potentially all be in agreement that maybe we could do this again sometime before long, where we carry on having this discussion, a very important discussion at that. But all that is left for me to do is to say thank you to all of our guests, to Chloe Summer, who is one of the witnesses in said report that we've been discussing, Daisy Aboudi, who's Deputy Director of Sephardi Voices UK, Rabbi Joseph Dweck, Senior Rabbi of the S&P Sephardi Community, Sarah Levan, Director of Jewish Life at JCOS, and Stephen Bush, author of the report that we've been talking about, and of course, political editor at the New Statesman. Thank you all very much indeed. That is it for this edition of the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group. Through its partners, GPG is working to support the growth of Jewish community life in the UK and worldwide. And to find out more, you can visit gpg.org. Thank you very much to Justin Cohen for producing this episode. Thank you for listening. Please do remember to subscribe to the show in your podcast application, and that way you'll hear any previous episode or be informed when new ones become available. And don't forget that for any more information on anything we've been discussing in this program, you can always go to jewishnews.co.uk. From me, Phil, Dave, do join us next time here on the Jewish News Podcast. Goodbye.